you, John. Yeah, well, you left your Ole and Lena jokes at home, but I'm here, so that's close enough, right? I want to start by just thanking Stephen and his colleagues at IFDC for getting this phosphorus study done. That was really timely, and boy, we really needed that right now to actually take a more factual look at what the situation with rock P resources are. Now, my assignment here is sort of a logical next step in this. We talked about the supply of phosphorus resources, and now we're going to look at a kind of a geographically focused to take a geographically focused look at phosphorus deficiency effectiveness in the U.S. And before I really get into that, I want to start in a very broad and very basic way by looking at nutrient management and what we might call 4R nutrient stewardship, or application of the right nutrient source at the right rate, right time, and right place. We see that as really a central to good nutrient management, whether it be phosphorus or other nutrients, and we see that within the context of cropping systems. And you could argue that you judge the efficiency and effectiveness of phosphorus or other nutrients by how much they contribute to accomplishing the objectives of the cropping systems that those nutrients are used in. And then you look a little more broadly than that, and you ask yourself questions about what that effect has been on the sustainability, not just of the system, but of the entire industry of agriculture, if you will, that those systems are part of. And then as you take it one step further, you get into sort of the topic of this presentation, and that is nutrient use efficiency. You can imagine a rather large set of potential performance indicators that could be used to judge whether this system is working or not. And of course, that's which ones you emphasize will be stakeholder individual dependent. But most of us would see as critical performance indicators some expression of nutrient efficiency. And there are many ways of calculating that, and that's where we're going to go next. But this, I think, is important to establish the context of an evaluation of nutrient use efficiency. That our objective is really not that one indicator. That's just an indicator, one of a set of indicators that help us determine whether we're getting the job done or not in a very broad way. So just an attempt to set context here. Now let's go next into terminology. When we talk about phosphorus efficiency, it's very easy to not to communicate well because we can use that word to mean so many different things. And I'd like to just take you, and you've probably been through exercises like this before, I just want to take you through a comic, a schematic, if you will. We'll picture here a cornfield in the Midwest that's producing 12 tons per hectare. Let's assume that we've got a kind of a typical rate, 75 kilograms of P2O5 per hectare going in, it's being applied. Typically, maybe something in the neighborhood of 15 kilograms of that would end up in the plant. And then for that plant to meet its full needs, if you do some arithmetic, you find, okay, that means about 95 kilograms would have to come from the soil. And then if you look at what's eventually in the plant, you would see that in the grain part, using typical concentrations, about 75 would be removed. And then coming back into the soil again as a stover, as crop residue, would be another 35. Okay, so we've got all those numbers in front of us. Now, what is the efficiency of phosphorus in that system? Well, there's a few ways you could calculate it. You could say, for instance, that, all right, you've got 75 kilograms of P2O5 going in as fertilizer. You recovered 15% in the crop. Therefore, your efficiency is 15%, or 20%, I'm sorry. That's the short-term recovery efficiency. Or you could say, well, we've got 75 going into the system and 75 going out in the harvested portion, so our efficiency is what? 100%, right? And actually, both expressions have meaning and have application. If your focus is really mostly short-term, that recovery efficiency, that annual recovery efficiency becomes pretty important. If, on the other hand, your perspective is more of a long-term perspective, and I think this is an important one in, as we address this issue of a phosphorus resource efficiency, where we think about the mining supply, mined supplies, and what that means, then this long-term indicator of efficiency becomes important. Now, which of those is most important? Well, again, it depends upon what where you're headed. You can argue that short-term recovery is important in certain situations. For instance, you could argue that it's always important because of the time value of money, right? I'd rather get paid today for an investment I make than tomorrow or the next day. And so there's always some relevancy to that short-term recovery. Also, if you got short land tenure, I know I'm going to be on this land this year. I don't know about next year. Then you'd kind of like to get paid back right away for an investment that you make. Where you've got limited operating capital, suboptimal soil test levels, you can't get it all done right now, and so you're begging for some time, then short-term recovery, again, is pretty important. You've got if you're on a soil that has some known phosphorus fixation potential, where it's very difficult to build that soil up to critical levels, short-term recovery is probably important. Threat to water quality. We have situations, areas, for instance, in North America where a lot of the water quality issues are result from snowmelt. Soil test P level is pretty important in those kinds of systems. And so the focus here, though, will be more on the long-term efficiency as related to use of global pre-reserves. And so I'm focusing on that kind of efficiency, not because it's the only one that's of importance, but just because it seems to fit well in this particular context. Now, to do that, I'm going to use a bunch of aggregate data. And it will come primarily from two data sources. They're both IP&I sources. One is on the left screen there, left part of the screen, is an effort we've been working on for a couple years. It's still in its preliminary stages. It's called a Preliminary Nutrient Use Geographic Information System, or NUGIS for short. It's a rather intensive look at nutrient balances across the U.S., looking at recoverable manure, fertilizer use, and then, of course, also crop removal. It's in preliminary stages, but we think it's at a point where we can use it to attack this issue of phosphorus efficiency in with aggregate data. And then the other data source is a report that we just recently, actually today is our first kind of official release of any information from it, and that is Soil Test Levels in North America 2010. It's a summary that we do every 4 or 5 years, and in our in the IPN exhibit there is a Better Crops preprint that sort of summarizes the summary, if you will, and the bulletin itself will be a rather extensive publication that will be available probably within the month, and it'll be available on our website. So those are the two data sources, the aggregate data sources that we're going to be using to get at this question of efficiency of phosphorus use in the U.S. We'll start with some basic information. This is a very simple, straightforward fertilizer peak consumption curve that many of you have probably seen before. You may not have seen a point with an estimate for 2009 in it. Then that is just an estimate at this point. It's not official. And you can see we were pretty stable in phosphorus fertilizer use for a couple of decades at least until 2009. And because of the fertilizer price spike that occurred at that point, we went back to phosphorus use levels comparable to where we were in 1965. So that was a large reduction in phosphorus use back in 2009. Okay, well, that's phosphorus input. We can now incorporate some of that data that is in that NUGIS project and come up with some trends that incorporate crop yield increases over that period of time and allow us to estimate nutrient balance. Now, you'll notice, even though we're looking at a 20-year period there, there's only 5 points. The reason for that is our NUGIS model requires ag census data to estimate livestock numbers, and there's some other places where we use ag census data, and that's at 5-year intervals. And so what you see are the census nodes occurring across this 20-year period. And at the Towards the top, you see the red line. That's the fertilizer. That's what the 20-year line looks like for that fertilizer use expression that we looked at in the previous graph. The top line is the ends up being the crop removal line, and right away you notice that the removal line is increasing faster than the fertilizer use line. Then we come down. This is recoverable manure, and that's based on, again, ag census data on inventory for livestock, and then using NRCS recoverability estimation procedures that Kellogg and Lander used a number of years ago in their writings. And then down at the bottom you have the balance figure. And you'll notice that it is positive, meaning that there's more phosphorus going into these systems than is being removed, but it is trending towards zero. Now, that is just looking at balance. We can take the same kind of data and calculate a removal-to-use ratio, which for our purposes here might actually be more useful because it gives us a ratio or a percent where we kind of get a sense for where we're at. And we take that same balance data for the U.S. and we plot that now on again over this 20-year period, and you'll see a positive slope on that line because we are recovering a higher percent of inputs now, and actually ends up being about 0.92 for the U.S. as a whole. And now we can get sophisticated with our regression and our extrapolation, right? And we can extend that line out, and lo and behold, we find that in the year 2036, we will be perfect in phosphorus use in the U.S., right? Well, not quite, because what that U.S. average curve or line actually represents is the average of a bunch of stuff that looks like this, okay? Now, we look at four separate states, and I've selected these to show the range that exists, all right? And so we'll start at the top and work our way down. Here, this green line represents the state of Illinois. Now let's look back at what it says. Okay, so it passes the 1.0 line in what? In the early 90s? And now today it would say that in the state of Illinois, we are extracting somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% more phosphorus than is going in. And actually, the NUGIS model here reproduces almost exactly the numbers that were published in Science within the last year from Vitusek and colleagues. A group of ecologists really used a lot of different methodology, but ended up with some similar numbers. And so just point that out and indicate that is not a number that we're the only ones that are calculating. The Corn Belt has very negative budgets for phosphorus right now in many, many of those states. The next one is Kansas, and that's, I think, is kind of typical of the Great Plains states, where in the past we had very, very deficit, we had pretty deficit nutrient balance going on. And then as fertilizer use increased and some other changes took place, we've been gradually moving towards something that's closer to a balanced phosphorus budget in that area. And now if you look at the Kansas situation, it's approaching one, where removal and use is almost the same. Then we get down to Florida and California, some of the lower numbers, and you'll know lower removal to use ratios, and you notice it's rather interesting, they're going in opposite directions. Florida, the removal to use ratio is increasing with time. California has been actually declining with time, and we're still sorting out through exactly what's going on there, but I suspect there's some land use changes that are at least partly behind those changes. But again, we're in a preliminary stage of this nutrient balance evaluation, and we'll be digging into that sort of thing more as we go ahead. So anyway, lots of variability in trends with time and in where we're at actually today. And this map now gives you a broader picture of where we are today, at least in 2007, the last census year. And there's two ways that these data are expressed in this figure. The map in the background that's color-coded is actually by 8-digit HUCs or watersheds, all right? And the legend is off to the right. The dark green areas indicate low removal to use ratios. The red areas end up representing high removal to use, where we're removing a lot more than what's going in. And you'll see some patterns occurring, very striking patterns, differences across the country. The number that you see printed is the average for that state. It's removal to use ratio for that particular state. And so, again, if you look over along the east here, you see some lower numbers. You look at what's happening there, you see often that many of those are associated, most of them are associated with livestock numbers, of course. Then a lot of that's being caused by recoverable manure inflating those budgets. You look at the Corn Belt, and you see reds and a little bit of yellow indicating a balance, but there's a lot of reddish and orangish colors in that region. Plain states, pretty much balanced, lots of yellows and light greens. And then kind of a mixture out west where we get a little bit sparse in the amount of data that's being generated. Okay, now we're going to shift from one part of the equation, the plant part, and looking at recoverability. And remember, if we're really kind of trying to look at this as an expression of efficiency, we have to know what's going on with the soil. And so now we're going to shift to looking at soil trends. And this first map is just an overview of what we saw as we compared 2001 soil P levels in the country versus 2005. And the yellow areas simply indicate regions where we really couldn't detect much of a change. And you notice a lot of that map is yellow. Now we'll switch to a situation or figures where we're using the 2010 data. That we're in the process of completing, and some of you were at the soil testing and plant analysis breakfast this morning, and you've seen some of this before, so this will be a repeat. But what do you see here? Well, you'll notice that, and this is based on a fair number of samples. You're looking at close to 8 million samples, 2005 to 2010. So this is a fairly extensive set of data that's being summarized in this one graph here. You'll notice, first of all, that there's been a shift out of this highest category into the lower categories, and you'll see in 2010, when you compare green bars to red bars, you'll notice that these categories are increasing. And in fact, that represents a decline in median P levels in North America of about 6 parts per million. Now, here you see a map of median Bray P1 equivalent levels for the states and provinces. And again, you see a very wide range in median P levels. We've got some areas out east here in the northeast where you'll see numbers that exceed 100 parts per million of median P. And then as you move into the northern Great Plains, you essentially lose an order of magnitude in soil P levels. Now, what is of particular interest is the change that's taking place. That's what gets us to being able to look at removal to use ratios as an indicator of efficiency. And so what we see here again are some patterns. Those areas that had very high P levels in the east are actually getting a little higher based on the summary data. And again, a lot of that has to do with manure and livestock concentrations, just budgets that we got more going into those systems than can be utilized locally. Then you see the Corn Belt with a lot of red numbers indicating reductions in soil P, and then this region that indicates that there's not much change going on, and the Prairie provinces looks like they actually added some to soil P in that part of North America. So now what we're going to do is, we're going to look at a couple of regions because it's where I think the data are the strongest to address this issue of phosphorus efficiency with aggregate data. One will be the Corn Belt, this area, and then the other region we're going to look at will be over here, the Dakotas and Montana. Now, the reason I picked on these three states is because if you look at the last three soil test summaries, so this is over a decade now, 3 points spanning a decade, you look at those median P levels, and there's just no change, right? I mean, 12, 14, 14, 10, 11, 11, 11, 14, 13, they're just flat lines. And so that's an interesting situation, because now if we switch over and look at nutrient balance, like phosphorus balance, what goes in, what's coming out, again, at a state aggregate level, we can evaluate, I think, we at least get an evaluation of phosphorus efficiency in this region. And lo and behold, we've got removal-to-use ratios that are essentially one, and you've got zero change in median P level. And so things seem to work out. I mean, no big shock there, but you can interpret it however you want to, that there's no free lunch if you want, you know, that it's a mass balance sort of a situation, and there's some evidence that that does work for phosphorus. And the bottom line from that, as hard as it may be to accept, considering what we've always taught everybody about phosphorus, that suggests that the efficiency, when you look at it as far as what goes in, what goes out, it's approaching 100%. I mean, we're not losing anything. It's just being stored in the soil for a while. Now, let's go to the Corn Belt with that same evaluation. And here you're looking at median P levels, the top number in each state or province, and then the bottom number is the change. All right, you've already seen both these numbers. We're just bringing them together in one visual here. And you'll see a couple of black numbers indicating no change, and then the rest of the numbers are red. Now, what I do in this next visual is I take the NUGIS project that we talked about and the soil test summary project, and we bring those data sets together into a regression. Okay? And so we're looking at NUGIS balance as estimated by NUGIS versus annual change in median P level. And we do a simple regression. All right, well, what is the R squared is 0.62, that's not one. But, you know, for data like this and all the warts and all the data, you know, maybe not too bad. 62% of the variability with this one indicator of balance, perhaps not bad. Now, what I find particularly interesting is how close that regression line comes to the origin. You know, and what that means is that when you have a balance of zero, what's going in equals to what's basically going out, with, you know, ignoring some things on both sides of that equation, what do you get? You basically get no change in soil test P. So with this aggregate data, again, we're back just like those three states. If you know what's going in and you know what's going out, you know, it looks like we're not losing much. And again, it comes down to that point where efficiency is pretty high. Efficiency in this kind of expression is pretty high. Now, so far we've been talking only about efficiency. Let's try to tackle effectiveness just briefly. And I'm going to sort of dodge this, but we'll do the best we can. The approach I'm going to take is I'm going to go back and consider soil P critical levels. And you can define critical levels for P in a lot of different ways, but the way I've defined them here is in a rather mechanistic way, just by looking at university recommendations and from them inferring the level at which the recommendation drops to zero in sufficiency approaches or to crop removal and build and maintenance approaches. And so which approach is functional depends on what state you're in. And perhaps what grower you're talking to and what that grower's objectives are, whether they're short-term, long-term, whatever. And so as you look at these numbers, you see quite a range in critical levels as well, with generally the more western numbers being somewhat lower, 15 to 25 parts per million. This is all Bray P1 equivalent. And then as you move further east, southeast, northeast, they tend to go up. All right, and so that's the critical level. Now, in this next figure, what we're doing is using the frequency distribution functions and asking them what percent of samples test below those critical levels. And that generates the numbers you see here. And again, you'll notice you've got areas where you have very low frequency of numbers, very low frequency of samples testing below criticals, like out here. And you've got other areas, and it's basically telling us the same kinds of things that we looked at before. But in this case, I'm trying to use this information to say something about the risks involved in accomplishing certain kinds of objectives. Now, if we go out to those eastern numbers, you've got a higher risk of phosphorus-reducing water quality. And don't come up and say, okay, it's source and transport, it's not just source. Well, okay, we let everything else be equal. You've got very high soil P levels, you've got higher risk in general of reducing of phosphorus-reducing water quality. Now, if we move over to this area, the other extreme, you've got a higher risk of phosphorus-reducing crop yields. And in fact, of course, we can make general statements like that, but whether phosphorus use is effective or not is not a question you can answer with aggregate data, because that depends on that, that's a farm or field level sort of assessment. And so we're back again then to the degree of adoption of 4R nutrient stewardship at the farm or field level, really, and assessing what happens at that point. And that takes us then back to the diagram we started with today, and it reminds us that we use phosphorus to accomplish certain objectives relative to the cropping system and relative to our the impact of our management on the sustainability of the whole system. And so that's how we have to judge the effectiveness aspect. So what are we saying about efficiency? Well, to me, it varies greatly among regions in the country. We have regions with apparently very high phosphorus efficiency, approaching 100%, like the Northern Great Plains, the Corn Belt, possibly some others that we really haven't evaluated very well. We have other regions with apparent efficiencies that are less than 50%, appear to be quite low. Atlantic Coastal Plain states, California, a couple examples. And these low efficiencies are typically associated with either high livestock inventory per cropland area or areas of intensive vegetable or fruit production. So we have a range there. There's not just one answer to the efficiency and effectiveness of phosphorus in the U.S. And with that, I'm going to end and look forward to questions or comments.
We got time for a couple questions.
Great.
Well, 100% efficiency, that's amazing, which that means there's no nutrient losses like erosion, or we're going to get clean water. The second question is that, well, the yield has been increasing the last 20 years, crop yield, nitrogen fertilizer has been increasing, the phosphorus fertilizer stabilized. Does that mean plants require less phosphorus, or become more efficient with the phosphorus nutrient?
Yeah, well, okay, the question was, fertilizer use has been stable or declining and crop yields continue to go up, right? Yeah. Well, what this tells me is that the way we're managing, at least in the Corn Belt, is enabled by the way we used phosphorus 30 years ago. We built up a lot of soil P during those years. And what we've been doing now for a couple decades is we've been tapping those reserves. And I think this last summary particularly is showing us that those reserves are now starting to be depleted. So there's some changes. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff, actually, when you think about its agronomic implications, as well as the water quality environmental implications, because we've got areas that have negative budgets where phosphorus efficiency is being used, is probably too high right now, which is hard to accept. But that's what these kinds of aggregate numbers would suggest. And then you've got other areas that are extremely high with low P use efficiency, and the numbers suggest that they're getting, that the efficiency is actually getting lower with time. So
I think we need to keep on time, but after the next talk, there will be time to ask questions again. So thanks, Paul.